From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. When a person is convicted of a felony, they lose their right to vote in Florida. And when it comes to getting that right back, this state is one of the toughest. Because of that, we have more than 1.5 million people who can't vote. That's 9% of our state, nearly 1 in 10 people. In most states, that percentage is around 2. We'll look at Florida's current laws regarding felons trying to regain their right to vote. We'll break down where Florida stands in a recent report on voting and civil rights in the U.S. Plus, we'll talk with people on a mission to help those who've served their time get back that right to vote. Also on the show today, a new study shows that dinosaurs are not quite as bird-like as scientists once thought. A study of the gestation of dinosaur eggs sinks some teeth into a long-held theory. We'll talk to the Florida paleobiologist who led that study later in the show. But first, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Fossilized dinosaur eggs are providing new details about how these prehistoric animals lived and offering a few new clues as to what led to their ultimate demise. We'll have that story later in the show. But first, staggering disparities were exposed this week in a new report from the Brennan Center for Justice. According to this report, Florida's system for felons seeking to reinstate their right to vote, serve on a jury, or run for office is one of the strictest in the nation. And that has led to almost 1 in 10 people in the state being at least partially disenfranchised. Thomas Lopez with the Brennan Center for Justice is joining us from New York to talk about what makes Florida so different from the rest of the states in this regard. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Also in the studio, we are with Professor Pamela C. with the FGCU Department of Justice Studies. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We're talking about Florida's felons and their right to their fight to regain some of their basic rights, like the right to vote. Do you have a question or a comment? Share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Mr. Lopez with the Brennan Center for Justice, the report says that no state disenfranchises more of its citizens than Florida. How does it do that?
That's exactly right. You know, to give a little national context, there are about 6 million people nationwide who are disenfranchised because of a past criminal conviction of some kind, and about a quarter of that total national population lives in Florida. You ask, how does it do it? Why does it do it? There is a reason why Florida has such a large disenfranchised population. It is because, effectively, if you have a felony conviction, you are effectively disenfranchised for life. It is very difficult in Florida to get the right to vote back. There is a lengthy and complicated process to do so. And somebody who has fully completed his or her sentence, including any incarceration, any community supervision, must wait at least 5 years before even applying. The current system that exists in Florida is particularly strict. That was the one that was established under Governor Scott in 2011. It replaced a set of rules under Governor Crist in which at least a few thousand people every year were able to get their right to vote back.
Dr. C, in Florida, if someone has been convicted of a felony or Constitution states that person loses the right to vote until the restoration of civil rights, what does that mean?
All that means is that there's a request for clemency, and that is found in our Florida state constitution. It gives the governor and two members of the cabinet authorization to allow for clemency for someone to regain their civil rights that are lost when they are convicted and convicted of a felony and sentenced.
What rights does a felon lose? They lose the right to vote.
Obviously, the right to vote. They're not allowed to serve on a jury, for example. They're purchasing a firearm and things of that nature.
And that's indefinite until they take the actions to try to have them reinstated.
Right. It's up to the felon. It is up to that person to go through the process. They are notified. There is a process by which they are sent a letter.
You're now eligible.
That you are eligible. And that's tracked through the Department of Corrections. And they are notified. And the process, however, is lengthy. And there's no question about it that it does take time. After you have completed your sentence, you then must wait. I think it's 5 years for certain crimes, 7 years for others, and you can make application to regain those rights, and it goes to the clemency board, and there's a whole process by which you would go through this, and you have to have remained crime free, you have to have completed all your sentence. Now, all of your sentence includes things such as paying your restitution. So, if you have harmed someone, if there's a victim, and you are required to pay restitution to that person, well, you would have to pay that as well, or court costs, or things that you would have incurred as a result of that.
Would that include things like in a civil suit?
No.
Okay, that would be completely separate.
That is entirely separate.
And what about the Second Amendment, Second Amendment right to bear arms? Is that something that's enforced statewide against?
Well, for every right, there are exceptions. And this has been deemed as one of those exceptions. So, for example, if you have someone that's found guilty of, say, assault with a deadly weapon, armed robbery of, say, a convenience store, if their term is completed, are you ready to allow them to purchase firearms? Well, a lot of people are not. And
then there's felony fraud in accounting or something like that. That would not be – I guess that would be kind of more subjective.
Well, actually, if you think about that for a minute, felony fraud or some other kind of crime that involves honesty, integrity, for someone to lose their right to vote if they are not honest or have integrity, that has been kind of the basis for this. Now, the fact that it had been the basis for it for some time doesn't make it something that we ought to always continue. Like, when I look at this and when I teach my students about crimes and punishment, when someone is convicted of a crime, they are sent to prison for punishment. When they've completed that, it should be done. Why do we continue to punish them after they have completed their sentence?
Well, and that leads me to a question for Mr. Lopez. It seems like voting is a basic right in the United States, one that we've all understood since we were children, that was a big deal, and it's protected by several amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Where did the idea come from to make losing the right to vote a part of a person's penalty for a crime?
You know, you raise a really important point. The felony disenfranchisement is something that does make the United States somewhat unique for Western democracies, but Florida's lifetime ban on voting for people with felony convictions is particularly unusual. If you look around the country, you find that our laws are actually a bit of a patchwork. So you have some states that restore the right to vote after somebody has completed an incarceration term. Some states it is incarceration plus parole. Some states, there are a couple of states that actually don't take the right to vote away at all. And so Florida is one of only three states where there is effectively this lifetime ban on voting. These laws tend to be old. You know, in Florida's case, the law actually goes back to the period right after the Civil War, where it was expressly designed at that time to counter the voting rights that had been granted to newly freed slaves in the Constitution.
Yeah, you mentioned in your report that they have racist origins from Florida's Jim Crow laws.
That's right. That's right. And you know, one of the things that's, you know, important to understand is that, you know, these laws do have ugly historic origins, but these laws do today disproportionately affect some communities, including African-American communities, more than others. And that the endurance of these laws is something that it's quite striking. And the endurance of it in Florida is particularly striking, again, in light of the fact that over the past 20 years or so, there are more than 20 states that have taken some kind of action, whether legislative or executive, to allow more people with past criminal convictions to vote, or vote sooner, or at least access that right more easily than they can in Florida.
Yeah, and Dr. C, Florida has seen several constitutional conventions, including a major overhaul in 1968 at the height of the civil rights era. Did any of those laws ever change? I mean, nothing changed at all?
No, not really. And what you're talking about.
And there were some opportunities, too.
There were some opportunities, but the fact is there has always been – let's see, I'm looking at from May of 1998 is the latest change that came about, and that is relating to clemency, which outlined the basic process that says that the governor – and the two members of the cabinet are the ones who are responsible for providing for the for clemency. And the governor has imposed certain restrictions on that. So those restrictions have come about through the various governors, and that's, you know, certainly Governor Scott, but Governor Crist, and going back through Governor Childs and Governor Bush. So all of them have had some impact on the creation of the rules and the process that relate to it. But yeah, I think from 1938, there was a part of the Constitution that was horribly invidious. And later on, there were some changes, and as we were talking about, after the adoption of the 14th Amendment in 1868. And then certainly later on, as we're looking through the process, there have been some opportunities to change it, but no, we have not, as a state, taken that opportunity to make any significant changes in it.
Which is what has made us the outlier when looking at the entire country. We are talking about Florida's felons and their fight to regain some of their basic rights, like the right to vote. Do you have a question or a comment, or do you have a felony on your record and you have some questions? Give us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook or at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Mr. Lopez, I wanted to ask you, it seems like in our state, a lot of the power in this type of a situation and granting or non-granting of clemency seems to reside with the governor of the state. Is that the case in the rest of the states?
It depends. You know, there are many states where the governor, as a matter of law, may have some kind of power that isn't necessarily used that often, but as a functional matter, resting this solely with the governor is quite unusual, to the extent that in most states, when people get their voting rights back, it's an automatic process. You know, for instance, in Texas, when you fully complete your sentence, including your probation and parole, you get your right to vote back. The governor does not have to take action. There isn't any kind of special hearing or appeal that needs to take place. It's simply a matter of law. Florida, in having the governor hold this much power in this particular way, again, really stands out. Only Iowa and Kentucky are similar in that particular way.
It seems like the number of people who are granted clemency varies from governor to governor. And here they draft their own clemency rules. And it seems like since 2011, the number of people that were granted clemency has dropped significantly. Dr. C, have you seen that? And what does that do to you?
Well, there are a lot of numbers. The numbers have dropped dramatically, and that is true.
Well, when you look at it on a bar graph, it's like,
dramatic.
Up here and then way down here in the last few years.
Right, and that is in part because of the changes that came about through the application process imposed by Governor Scott that required additional review, review by the Clemency Board, the extended waiting period, changes in which crimes would be allowed to have clemency, and some, according under Governor Crist, were actually allowed as automatic.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Lopez, do you see, is there an initiative or to try to get that changed?
You know, there is an effort that's in place to try to change the Florida Constitution so that people are able to exercise their right to vote. You know, one of the things that I think it's important for folks to understand is that while the governor does have a lot of latitude in terms of how to exercise that power, this is really baked into the state constitution. And so to change the fundamental law, to go to some kind of process where more people are getting their right to vote back or getting their right to vote back without having to go through this process to encode that in law, you need to change the state constitution. And you know, that does require signatures, and then that does require, eventually a public vote.
From what I understand, that there's been a petition circulated, and there's also then been some language submitted to the Supreme Court to put something on an amendment up for a ballot initiative.
That's right. The Supreme Court is going to be having a hearing in March on it's a the matter they're going to be considering is whether or not the language that has been submitted kind of meets the constitutional standards for how these constitutional limits are supposed to be phrased. It's not necessarily on the substance of whether or not this is something that is the right thing to do or something that, you know, the public should vote up or down on. It's on that kind of specific question. But it is an important opportunity for folks to connect with the issue, to understand it, and to understand that this is something that affects millions of people. I mean, literally millions of people.
Yeah, 1.6 million is the last number that I saw.
That's right.
And that is a significant amount of the number of people in our country. We have a caller who would like to ask a question, Roger from Lehigh Acres. What would you like to ask, Roger?
Actually, I just have a comment. I don't have a question.
Okay.
I am a convicted felon in Florida. Happened about 20 years ago for a controlled substance offense. I've always been able to vote. Nobody's ever told me I couldn't. And I have served on juries. In fact, I just got another summons for Lee County for jury duty. So I don't know if a lot of us just slip through the cracks. I've never brought it up to them, like, to try to get out of jury duty.
Well, we won't give them your last name on the air. Well, actually, it could get you out of jury duty if you don't want to do that. But yeah, maybe just slip through the cracks. But according to law, the state felons are not supposed to be allowed to vote. So maybe
I've been registered to vote for 30 years in Florida, and nothing's ever changed. I still have my same polling place and everything else. I've never been denied the right to vote. So,
Roger, may I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
You say you've been registered to vote for 30 years, and this incident occurred 20 years ago. So you were registered to vote prior to the incarceration. How long were you in jail?
I actually didn't serve any time in jail.
Okay, well, that could be the issue, because if you didn't go through the Department of Corrections, it was probation or parole some other kind of imposition of penalty that did not involve going to jail. Regardless of the fact that it was a felony conviction, you never got on the list. So,
Well, good for you. Keep on.
Whether
voting.
I should be there or not, I don't know. I'm not gonna alert them.
Yeah, don't
I'm
rock
not.
That boat.
Yeah,
we're happy to have you voting.
It is an important right, and that leads me to another question, Thomas Lopez with the Brennan Center. It seems like there could be some missteps. It finds a number of people that are applying to restore their right to vote, and then it could have an effect on eligible citizens. How do you see that in your study?
Well, I think one of the things that the report gets into is that there have been issues in the past with the ways in which the state has to maintain an accurate list of who's eligible, who's registered to vote, and one of the things that we've seen in the past are cases where the state hasn't necessarily gone about that process in a way that actually accounts for people who are actually eligible to vote, who may have felony convictions but have had their rights restored, particularly in states outside of Florida, and ends up capturing people who are eligible voters. And these are costs that otherwise aren't necessarily apparent. You know, we talk about the 1.6 million who are formally disenfranchised. We have people, for instance, like those caught up in that instance, and we also have people who are affected by what we would call de facto disenfranchisement. That's where there may be somebody who has his or her right to vote restored. You know, they may have gotten it, you know, earlier in the process. You know, for instance, when Governor Crist was in office under those rules. You know, and they, you know, but they may mistakenly believe that they're unable to vote because of what the rules are now.
Mm-hmm. Dr. C, you were going to say something?
Right. And I think, Tomas, you've brought up a very important point, and that is that at times the actual standards that are applied to each of these persons that are affected have been applied differently. So that one, in an instance where one person has been a convicted felon, they are released, they don't receive the clemency, they don't have their rights restored, and yet someone who is in an almost identical situation might have their rights restored. And that's because there are different rules and processes and procedures that might be in place based on who happens to be in office at a particular time. That is a problem.
Yes, it's not very consistent.
Correct.
And it seems to change a lot. And then, Tomas, you were saying in your report that there are there's a drop in number of people even seeking clemency at this point.
That's right. I mean, we have a, you know, Florida now has a more complicated process than it had before. There is obviously, you know, this waiting period, and the waiting period actually resets if someone is even arrested and there are no charges. And so that you have a system that is more strict, that is more difficult, that is more intimidating, and can take longer for somebody to get through.
We have a call coming in from Desmond, who is in Orlando. Desmond, what would you like to ask?
Yes, good afternoon, Julie. I wanted to comment on your last caller, some comments that the last caller made about him not losing his right to vote, or apparently not losing his right to vote. Mm-hmm. And I know that you made some comments about him having not served jail time. And I just wanted just to clarify that you do not have to serve jail time to lose your right to vote. Any felony conviction, whether you serve jail time or not, automatically disqualifies a person from voting, and they would lose their civil rights, with the exception, there's only one exception, and that is that person had a withhold of adjudication at the time. Now, if they have a withhold of adjudication, they cannot, they have not lost their rights, but if they did not, then regardless of whether or not there's jail time imposed in the sentence, that person would have effectively lost their rights in Florida.
I think there are just so many different ways for cases to be adjudicated, and I think some of the numbers, from what I understand, are tabulated through the Department of Corrections in some ways. So maybe that could be where somebody could slip through the cracks, perhaps.
Well, one of the issues that we had in the past when Governor Crist first instituted his policy was that the Florida Department of Law Enforcement tabulated that data, but that data was not necessarily shared with the local supervisors of elections. And so a person could effectively be convicted of a felony offense, and when they go to register to vote, when the supervisor of election goes through their database, nothing pops up saying that person cannot be registered as a voter. However, you know, subsequent, you know, in the future, records will be sent down to the supervisor of election, and then when they're ordered to purge their files, then that person's name could eventually pop up, you know, where they were issued a registration card, but now it's being challenged. And that's definitely a problem with not being able to reconcile the two different databases. But that's something that we've raised before on issue. And I apologize. I am the chair for Floridians for Fair Democracy, the organization that's actually leading the current initiative.
You're doing what? I missed what you just said, that last line.
So the one that's actually leading the ballot, the current ballot initiative.
Oh, okay.
To restore voting rights, yes.
Okay, so you're the one that's leading the charge on this current initiative to restore voting rights. So it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for calling.
Yes, and thank both of your guests for their great comments.
All right. So tell me, so you're leading up this ballot initiative. Do you have, off the top of your head, your timeline? When do you expect to hear something from the Supreme Court about this, whether it's going to go on a ballot or not? Are you there?
I'm here. Based on the timeline for previous Supreme Court decisions, we expect to hear, have a ruling probably in April.
So we'll hear probably in April. If you hear in April and it does go, then you're looking at it maybe being on a ballot in November?
We're hopeful that we can collect enough signatures, because once there's Supreme Court approval, then we have a huge hurdle cross with collecting approximately another 700,000 signatures.
Okay. All right. Well, I really appreciate you calling in and giving us some additional details there. That was pretty lucky for us that you happened to be listening and gave us a call. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
And we have another call coming in from Leon, who's on Fort Myers Beach. And Leon has a question. What would you like to ask?
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. Have you addressed the issue of a felon who's convicted in another state where they have their civil rights restored and are able to vote and sit on juries and now even ran for office? But if I come to Florida, do I suddenly lose all those rights that I had in the other state because I have a felony conviction?
That is a really good question, Leon. How does it happen if you're a felon from another state and you move to Florida?
From the research that I've been able to do on this, it shows that those who have had their rights restored elsewhere, will be honored here in the state of Florida. And that's a constitutional requirement that if there's decisions made in other states, we do honor that. So if you have had your rights restored elsewhere, it will be honored here.
Okay. Mr. Lopez in New York, do you concur with that?
You know, I think one of the things that is important is if folks do have questions about that, they should definitely consult with election officials, consult with, even sort of consult with the local organization or with attorneys. But it should be the case. But obviously, I think one of the things that, we've heard on the show today is that obviously every individual circumstance can go a different way.
Yeah, and there are, every adjudication is different, and every person's case is going to be very different. So it will be an individual thing to figure out your individual personal situation. I wanted to ask about a part of your report that asserts that there is no connection between removing a person's right to vote and deterring future crime. Was the point of removing the right to vote to deter crime?
Well, I think one of the things, I'm glad you raised that point, because some of the arguments we hear against efforts to restore voting rights is that this is something that is part of the law enforcement process. And I think one of the things we want to point out is that there really isn't any evidence that points to the deterrent effect of disenfranchisement, that for whatever other values it may or may not have, there isn't really much to pin the argument that by taking away somebody's right to vote, by threatening to take away somebody's right to vote, you're preventing future crime from happening. And in fact, one of the bases for the growing support for voting rights restoration throughout the country, I mean, for places going far farther than Florida will be going, in the near future, comes from segments of the law enforcement sector. Folks who work on parole and probation issues, folks who work on reentry issues, even prosecutors in some places who say, look, there's not really this relationship. And instead, by restoring the right to vote, we help somebody take one additional step, out of many steps that take place, to reintegrating somebody into their community.
Especially when you have something that's 20 years ago and people are looking just to get the right to vote. I mean, it's – and then – I wanted to ask also about how that can restore someone's, involvement in their community and be an investment in the world that they live in. Dr. C?
Well, that's
I'm sorry. I wasn't specific.
I was going to say, that's exactly the case. I mean, that there is, the people who support this talk about how one of the big challenges that people can face when they're returning to their community is finding some level of engagement, getting them involved in their community, which can also be a factor in successful reintegration and avoiding recidivism. And so the right to vote is kind of this simple, fundamental way in which you can be involved in your community, be a part of your community, have a voice, model it for children, and really be a citizen again.
And that's an important aspect too, because whether you are a convicted felon or just ordinary folk on the street that's never committed a crime, the decisions that are made by our elected officials affect us all equally. So to take away the voice of one segment of the population so that they no longer have any voice in how the government is operated and how decisions are made, whether it's for taxes or even sidewalks or anything else. That, to me, is a significant issue and a significant problem.
Well, it's interesting to me the flip of the psychological impact. If you take away someone's right to vote, then it doesn't really have that much of an impact on their recurrent crime, but giving it back to them helps get them more invested in their community and stuff. All right. Well, we are going to have to leave it there. I would like to thank Thomas Lopez with the Brennan Center and also Dr. C with FGCU, Center for Justice. I know we had promised earlier in the show that we were going to talk about dinosaurs and their eggs, but we are having difficulties with our guests for our second segment, technical difficulties. So we're going to listen again to a show that we did last week, looking at an exciting opportunity to tell and share your story with the world. It's called StoryCorps, and it's happening all this month in Fort Myers. More on that coming up in the second half of our show.